Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas and you're listening to episode 40 of the Art Team Podcast. Back on the podcast today is both Emily Reynolds and Nando Alvarez Perez. The last time they were on, they were both in the Bay Area. Emily was working at the YBCA and Nando was practicing art and teaching. They have since moved to Buffalo and opened the Buffalo Institute of Contemporary Art, or BICA. And if you'd like to learn more about the work they were doing here in the Bay, I would recommend going back and listening to past episodes, which you can find on the website at artscenepc.com. Otherwise, enjoy the conversation with them both via Skype from Buffalo. All right, great. So it's good to see you both again. You two I've had on like several times before, and I always love having you both on because you both have a lot of cool things to say, and even cooler now because you guys are in a whole different art community than you were the last time we talked, which is now in Buffalo. And the connection is that you're originally from the area, right, Nando?
Yes. Yeah, I grew up in Buffalo before leaving to go to SF for school and stuff. So
tell me both what you've both been up to since then, and all the cool career trajectories that Buffalo has taken you on.
Yeah, well, we left Oakland in 2017 and moved out here. I got a job pretty quickly, or like actually I guess a little bit before we left, a part-time job at the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center, which is a museum that opened last year. And it's a museum that tells stories of the Underground Railroad in Niagara Falls as freedom seekers were trying to get to Canada to be free. So it's a really interesting museum. And I do marketing for them. I'm the marketing specialist. And then my other job now that I sort of got right as we were moving here is as I was leaving Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which is where I worked before, they were starting to launch publicly the project called Culture Bank, which is they're reimagining how funding can work for artists and art projects in the future, especially those that help identify assets in communities and can like strengthen communities and start leading towards equity. So when I was leaving, I was like, oh, that project seems really cool. And it seems like they might be able to use a project manager or something who is anywhere in the country. And so I talked to Deborah Cullen and the CEO, and she was like, yeah, why don't you stay on and keep working with Culture Bank? So I'm a project manager and marketing sort of contractor for Culture Bank. And it's really cool to have a foot in Buffalo and a foot in San Francisco still. And yeah, that's what I'm doing
for work. I've been, since we moved, it's been my first real foray into like as much full-time as possible adjuncting work as I can. And so I've been teaching graduates at the visual studies workshop in Rochester and undergrads at Alfred University and University of Rochester too. So it's just intro photo work it's been fun. It's been definitely a much longer commute than I had envisioned for myself, but it's been a lot of fun, and just dealing with undergrads has like it's a good way to get back into like the real basics of your medium and like reacquaint yourself with a lot of like what got you into it in the first place. So it's been fun.
Well, tell me, Emily, because like this is interesting that from what I understand, the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Museum is not a traditional art institution that which you usually like have your background in. Like has the experience been working at a museum like that?
Yeah, it's definitely different than I sort of envisioned myself. But when we were in grad school and I was getting the museum studies degree, I was always, or exhibition and museum studies degree, I was always thinking about how hopefully this might be a good degree in case you need to get a job in a museum that's not an art museum, because as we know, there's not always jobs in art museums and sort of the further
in the art world.
Yeah, in the art world. And in the smaller city you go to, the like less likely it is to have those jobs available. And so, yeah, I applied for this job at this history museum. But in my interview, I remember specifically, I was talking about some of the initiatives that YBCA does that are like more social justice oriented. And they were like, oh, that's really what we're interested in, too, is sort of a social justice component to the history we're telling. And that was a really like aha moment to me of like, oh, these are like similar. A lot of the like work and stuff that I do is actually really similar to what I did before, even though the, you know, the sort of content is different, the message and the goals and the ideas of like what art can bring and what history can bring are really similar. So yeah, it was a cool transition to make. And the stories of this, of the Underground Railroad in Niagara Falls are like mind blowing of what people did and how, I mean, when I moved here, I didn't even realize that the Underground Railroad extended past the Mason-Dixon line, because I think a lot of people, I don't know, you get this at history when you're like really young, and then it's like, oh, the North was where they didn't have slaves, right? It was fine, which is not the case.
Right.
After the
Fugitive Slave Act,
yeah. And so people really had to cross in Canada, and in Niagara Falls specifically, the stories are of people who worked at this hotel who were African American and who helped enslaved servants of like rich plantation owners who came to visit Niagara Falls and brought their enslaved servants with them. These waiters would help them cross the river at night and like, you know, serve dinner to their former masters the next day. It was like really, yeah, it's a cool place. Everyone should come and visit the
Well, and what about you, Nando? Because you were also teaching when you're up here in the Bay Area. What's the immediate difference that you felt, if there is one, between the type of students you're teaching here in the Bay Area and those art students that are in on the East Coast?
Well, I hope my CCA students hear this, because the most immediate difference is that when you're not in, when you're not in an art school, obviously the students are not focused on art making. And I have to admit that when I did my MFA at SFAI, my impression of the education that the undergraduates left with was that there were some really essential gaps, especially around writing and language and math, which is debatable how much that's actually needed for our role. But I had always worried that they like weren't like self-starty enough and weren't given the skills to be starting their own projects and verbalize about them and understand what they were doing. And now that I'm teaching non-art students, I realized that obviously a lot of those students go to those schools for that exact reason, and they understand that they are like they can foresee art project from A to Z without assignments,
right?
And they're much more my experience in art school had been that actually the students are a little more willing to take bites out of the material of their own. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the students that I've worked with here who are non-art majors have had actually, they've needed a bit more guidance, direction, and like really hands-on nudges. So that's the big immediate difference. But at U of R, they're all really brilliant kids. They're all like two majors plus they have to do these clusters that are outside of their majors, and like they need to be outside of the school that their major is in. So if they're in science, it has to be in like art or humanities. And so they're all like they're overloaded, but they're like super hard workers and like really smart.
Yeah, they sound also more well-rounded, I guess, is how you get them.
That is. I've thought a lot about how when I toured U of R's campus in 2006, when I looked at colleges, the cluster thing like didn't make a whole lot of sense, and how it seemed like you had to kind of spread yourself thin just to get through school. And now that's starting to look like a kind of like ideal pedagogical model for like working in the gig economy. And like these kids are genetics majors who have a lot of like audio engineering skills. And so when the science work dries up, well, maybe they can find a gig like recording sound for it's kind of weird. They are well-rounded. But to me, it's like, it's both, it's good, but it's also like revealing a lot of the, like, this is kind of dark, but like you are the best prepared for this incredibly screwed up workplace world that you're moving into, that you're like international relations and photography, that's like you feel prepared, like that's a little bizarre. They are overall that they have their hands in a lot more things at once and are very well-rounded. Yeah,
I feel like we also didn't talk at all. We talked about what we do for work, but we didn't talk about like what you're doing for art.
Oh yeah, what are you up to art-wise?
Things are, it's been interesting not being in a very large art city, and things I would say are going well. I've had some good opportunities in Toronto with commissioned work. Had a few things out in the Bay. Did a piece for the DeRosa Gala in January, which had a very interesting endpoint to how that piece wound up being sold. And then I'll have installation in a biennial show at this photography space in Pittsburgh called the Silver Eye Center for Photography. It's the first instance of a new biennial that they're launching that is called Radial Survey. And it's a survey of work from within like 300-mile radius of Pittsburgh. And so it's me and 9 other artists that are all like really at the like top of their game right now.
It's
And that's been a big brain drain for the last couple months. And I had a lot of time invested in it, but it's been great that things have been continuing to move, especially outside of Buffalo, and it's been great just to have a like home base to work from. So
yeah, well, the other thing it sounds like too, from what all the different places you're exhibiting, and by the way, congrats, I didn't know you sold a piece, which is, that's cool.
One piece that turned into two pieces
at the DeRosa.
not an intentional thing there. The piece was not actually for sale. I was kind of looking forward to having a lot of leftover material to make like bean bags with and curtains with, but it got sold and split down the middle, and I still need to introduce myself to the buyers because I have no information about them. But yeah, the piece just had this like Solomon's baby kind of like conclusion that I'm happy with. So.
Well, it sounds like even you moving to Buffalo has kind of helped you be able to like show in other cities, other, you know, compare when you're in the Bay Area, you're just in the Bay Area alone. But since you moved to Buffalo, I mean, you're showing in Toronto, which is a different country. And then you're moving to, I mean, you're even showing work over in Pittsburgh, which is a whole different state than California and New York.
You were part of a show at ReArt in New York too.
Yes, and a group show in New York, my first New York exhibition last May. And yet, Pittsburgh happened because of a failed application to a thing that I think caught their eye and were like, okay, you don't get the award, but here's like, we have like a spot for you in this thing. And it's all really been, to be honest, not random, but like I've also this year had a lot more time to like apply for opportunities, and like none of those have materialized, but I've gotten a lot of like random things that I just, yeah, if I was not here, I obviously would not be part of a biennial show of work made near Pittsburgh. And Toronto, the curator at the Drake Hotel there, Mia Nielsen, is like a wizard and just, or a witch. Yes. Very good witch. Has just an incredible eye and incredible capacity. And the Drake Hotel, like, line has enough spaces to kind of keep the, like, work turnover, like, consistent, and it's always turning. And Toronto looks like it's really starting to kind of, like, come into its own with, like, they've got their own big art fair there now, which it's, that's debatable how useful that is, but it is, it has become a much larger art market.
And the MCA Toronto just opened.
Yes, yeah.
MoCA. Yeah.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Which, actually, when we get to talking about BICA, the MoCA Toronto mission statement is the...
We'd like to steal it.
Yeah, it's great. We are deeply aligned on our values and ideas, so...
Well, then that takes me to... Well, actually, first, let me ask you this, because I think this will tie in to the stuff you're doing with BICA, which is the Buffalo Institute of Contemporary Art, which you both co-founded recently. How has it been integrating yourselves into the Buffalo art scene and the community that's there, and like, what has been your experience in doing so?
Well, I guess let me preface it by saying that since I'm from here,
right,
I think the two of us have had like different experiences, kind of. But my experience here and my time here before college and during college gave us like a very easy entry point to the art world here.
Yeah. Obviously we have slightly different experiences, but it's been like, it's really different than the art community in San Francisco, and that it's the like age range of people is a lot more diverse, because there's not the same level of displacement that I think happens to artists when they're in a city that they can't really afford to like make a long-term life in. And so, you know, like our social circle or our community of artists includes a lot more people who are in their like 50s, 60s, 70s, and even 80s than we ever noticed before. But building, I mean, getting to know the community hasn't been, I mean, we are just scratching the surface. Probably we know like one art community. I know that every city doesn't just have one. We know one really well, but Buffalo has a number of contemporary art and art spaces, including Hall Walls, which is this like storied venue,
very illustrious
contemporary art that was started by Cindy Sherman and Robert Longo and Charlie Clough, he's still in Buffalo, but obviously Cindy Sherman and Robert Longo have gone off to careers of
New York art world stardom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I hope Charlie doesn't run this. We have become very familiar and have become deeply involved with the most kind of monolithic art scene here. Being very diverse in age, is frankly not as diverse in a lot of other ways, mm-hmm. as the Bay Area is, and that's a thing has been kind of complicated. It's mm-hmm. We as artists and curators who are coming here to start a thing, and we have something that like we feel like we can like offer, we have been very welcomed, I'd say, into the Buffalo art world. But there are a lot of people making art here and who want to be involved in the arts here who don't have as easy entry points and access, and things can be a little homogenous at times.
And what led you guys to then decide, I would assume this is like really planting yourselves long-term in this community.
what led you guys to start your own art institution or art space?
Well, we jumped the gun a little bit. We decided to do this long before we ever moved back to Buffalo.
Actually, the name came first. Sounds really good. I mean, it's just like once it's in your head, it just sounds like, oh, I've heard of Mika, right? You know what Mika does. But so, yeah, there was a name first and there was a plan for a space long before we really knew, I think, where we'd land. But.
Yeah. So we kind of started, I mean, we had been talking about how we wanted to start a space long before we moved to Buffalo. And then, when we were like, the summer before we moved, we both took the class with Tanya Bergara at YBCA. And that sort of inspired us to like finally make this move and do something in Buffalo.
What was that class about?
So that was Tanya's Escuela de Arte Útil. It was this like 8-week course. It was I think 4 nights a week from like 4 till 8. And it was about it was Tanya and Alistair Hudson from MIMA in Middlesbrough, yeah, England. Yeah, now he's at Manchester. Art, yes. Gallery. Yeah, Whitechapel or something. But it was their first attempt at kind of really formalizing a lot of the ethos and ideas that Tanya had around making social practice work, which is, it's hard to sum up quickly, but like it's the Arte Útil, of course, translates to useful art. And it's by useful, she means a really, truly kind of hands-on, practical effect on the immediate world surrounding her, ever that art event.
But not like
hers.
A chair or something. Like, not like a, I don't know. I feel like it's on a deeper level than like, oh, useful art isn't like art that's also furniture.
No, right. Like it's very socially engaged, publicly directed, usually not often with the intent of serving some specific community,
yeah,
or need, or yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Although if you do go to the Arte Útil archives, that there are tons of projects that are just like incredible objects that the, like, you know, work around keeping the patent like uncopyrighted and stuff, like those kinds of like legal gestures and like deep like loopholes that come from like understanding a system outside of art and how aesthetics can be applied in that space is kind of like her core idea. If that was at all clear.
Anyways.
Yeah. But so that had kind of like made clear to us and firmed up a lot of our feelings about being in the art world in the Bay, which had started to become like, it had felt like very kind of inward looking, and like there were a lot of kind of spinning wheels around ideas around art's effect in the world, that it was just not in the Bay Area. It's very hard to affect those changes,
yeah,
that art claims to do.
So we chose Buffalo because it's a lot, we felt like it would be a lot faster to affect those changes here. And we
felt like we could have an impact here, because it's smaller. Because I'm originally from here, we felt like we had actual stakes here, and not like if we had moved to Los Angeles and just like started a space that we said would be doing whatever. The conversations around gentrification and arts and art spaces' role in that are a lot hairier and hotter. So yeah, it felt like here we had the roots, we had the stakes, we could make an impact, and just the confluence of all those things made it easier to launch space.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about the process of, so now like you had the idea, you know you're going to come out here, and you're here now, you're in, when I say here, I mean Buffalo, of course, but you know, you move out to Buffalo, and now you have a home, you have jobs, you're settled. Now you decide it's time to implement your idea that you've always been thinking about. Tell me, like, how you even begin to start something like that. I mean, I know, Emily, you have some experience because you helped start a gallery in San Francisco, which is called Bass and Rainer.
but how did you guys even begin to think about a space and a whole in a different city, and also in terms of like finding funding?
So the first thing we knew, we needed to do something so that we could take donations. So we decided, we did a lot of research and looked at like what grants we could apply to, and kept running into this problem that unless we were a 501c3, we couldn't apply for specific grants unless we had a fiscal sponsor. And also that if we wanted to take donations, like individual donations, they wouldn't be tax deductible, obviously. And so we decided that the best path forward for us was to do a 501c3. And Buffalo has an organization called Art Services Initiative of Western New York, which helps art organizations, like not just visual art, but like any kind of arts, kind of, like connects them with a lawyer who can help them go through the 501c3 process. So we did that, and that was actually fairly quick. Nando like started the paperwork. We were like, we're going to do it ourselves.
Yeah,
and then we were like, we don't know what any
trying to work out the IRS's system of documents and like legal needs was every time I thought I was like, I got this clear, something new would come up that was like, yeah. I don't got this at all. We met a lawyer who is an artist. His name is
Kyle Marler.
Yeah, he has a VR installation traveling thing called Flat Sitter that could be in your town soon. it really was like, if you can afford to take that step, and it was not cheap, but definitely like when it came to like resolving an issue fast and resolving it mentally for ourselves and not having to like, we opened up, it was a good step because we had been,
really,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. We had really been like spinning our wheels on what was the right way to do this. And we were scared that we would miss some major legal step. Having a lawyer just assemble all the documents and stuff really made things so much easier.
Mm-hmm. So that was the formal paperwork part. We also, needed to find a space, which that was like 9 months or maybe like 8 months of just looking at, like, we thought it was going to be so easy. Like, oh, real estate is so cheap here compared to in San Francisco. But it was not as simple as we thought. And like the real thing was just connecting with people. And that was also what we found, what we decided was really important was like, spending especially the time before we had a physical space, getting to know people around Buffalo. And so doing studio visits with anyone who asked, which we still will do, but also just trying to get meetings with anyone else who we thought would be interesting. At the end of every like studio visit and meeting that we did, we asked, who else do we need to talk to? Who else is like who's the next person on this list? And sort of started to use that to build out a picture of a big ecosystem that I think has been really critical in helping us figure out how to move forward and how to do things. But we ended up finding a space through a friend who
is also on the hunt for a kind of like work, live, possible retail space. And if he had also not been on this hunt, I don't know how we would have found the space.
Yeah, on the hunt and like better at it.
And much more like on the ground. Like we'd spend a lot of time like driving around and like online, but when you're looking at real estate in Buffalo from afar, it all looks like, oh my God, this is so cheap. It's all affordable. And then you get here and you realize like a lot of urban places, it is overdeveloped in areas that you would expect to be affordable. And so like we thought we'd have a space like last March, and we finally landed one last October, and that wound up really actually being an incredibly useful length of time to get to know people and just have meetings and like get to understand better what was like actually needed here.
And we did a pop-up in that time too, which that was a pop-up that was not, that we didn't organize, that we sort of saw a call for submissions and submitted, not as an artist, but as Bika, but we did actually show Nando's work, and we're sort of like working out some of the ideas of Bika through an installation of Nando's work. And that was a kind of a key thing too, because by applying to someone else's call, we like then got to know a ton more people because the people who put out the call and then eventually ran this event that had over 800 people come through was like, oh, now we have 800 people who saw a version of what we're trying to do and saw it not because they just walked into Bika, which is, you know, it's a big ask to get someone to come to a space they've never heard of to see weird contemporary art that they don't know the artist.
Well, what's interesting too is that, well, I mean, I wonder the name, the Buffalo Institute of Contemporary Art, like, has there ever been any iteration of that ever in the history of Buffalo?
The Albright Knox at one point was, it was like the Buffalo Arts Academy.
Yeah, we were like Buffalo Art School and like that. They're obviously because a lot of the arts orgs, like we just walked through ourselves, like there is a reason to go nonprofit. A lot of the needs for grants and things then demand a lot of like educational components. But there has not been a formal, I don't want to say ICA because I don't think we're aligning ourselves with ICA in Philly or that idea. We're much more interested in this like kind of like John Ruskin-esque idea of like mechanics institutes and like serving like kind of like a very practical vocational use for non-art people, but also still being a kind of like cultural hub and center. And yeah, there has not been that exact thing here yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked because like how you mentioned how before even like you actually opened up the physical space, you were finding other ways to, you know, you had pop-ups and finding other ways to interact with different people and meet new people in the community, networking basically before you guys were really like full-fledged had your doors open. And so I wonder, like, since you've opened, and you guys, you know, how has been the reception from the Buffalo community? Did it help this networking you guys did before when you opened? And have you had any challenges because, like, you know, people are like, oh, those are the people who came from San Francisco and came here and opened the Buffalo Institute of Contemporary Art. Like, have you had any of those challenges, or has it helped that like you guys were doing all this like networking beforehand?
I think the networking has definitely helped. I think there's probably a little bit of both. And I mean, there's no way that you hit everybody. And then there's also the people that you hit and they don't respond. And then they're like, well, I didn't know you were making an institute for contemporary art. You know that that's going to happen. And that like people are busy and people live in their own worlds and no one knows what to take like seriously mm-hmm. or believe in or not. I think that the networking really helped, but I also think for us, it's a lot about like putting our money now where our mouth has been for the past like
year.
And we've had two openings now. And the first one, we had a lot of people. We had like over 300 or maybe around 300 people come to. And that was
for our first thing in that space. It was like really awesome. It was just packed. And it was like exactly the crowd that we were, had kind of been like, where the fuck have you all been at all of the art openings that we've been to? And the Bonanza opening was a little quieter, and there were some scheduling conflicts there, but I think also like the luster of the new in Buffalo starts to rub off pretty quickly. to really continue to be like unexpected and
I'm not too worried. I think there's also one of the things that we're really pushing with Bika is it's not just about openings, is that we're like really trying to build mm-hmm. other kinds of events and engagements into it. Because an opening is a specific thing for a specific person. But like, honestly, if I really want to see a show, I don't even necessarily like the opening is a priority for networking. But if I like am really interested in seeing a show, and or if I'm like really interested in talking to like the gallerist who runs the space or something, I actually don't want to go during the opening because I know it's going to be a bad time to talk to anyone seriously. And so
yeah, for sure.
For us, it's like we're doing some other programming for Bonanza, and we're going to have a fashion show, which to me, it's like way more important that we get close to 300 people for a fashion show than it is for an opening. It's fine for that to be 80.
Yeah. And so let's talk about like what you guys do, because, you know, Bonanza, for instance, is a, I want to call them a collective, right? They're like a collective. No, like, where are they?
Conversation a lot, but I
But what have they? What have they called themselves?
NASA to me is a collaborative, because a collective suggests that there is a collective like ethos that outlives the individual members.
Sure.
And Bonanza is like a
new member. Yeah. And
Bonanza is a collaborative group. If any one of them were to leave, it's hard to imagine there being Bonanza still. So yeah. That to me, it's much more a collaborative art project or group than.
It sounds like you've had this conversation with Conrad many times.
No, just
yeah, actually, I was just listening to, they were on a podcast, and I was just listening to the interview on that, and that's where that sort of, like, we had sort of talked about it, and I've been trying to switch my language, but it's hard, because those words are just close together, like,
yeah.
All, they're just
close. They start in the same.
Yeah, they start in
the same. Etymology.
Yeah. Like
yeah. But
I understand the difference, yeah.
Well, Bonanza is a Bay Area-based group. Of artists. So it's interesting that they are having a show in Buffalo. And one of the things I want to talk about, which I think is really cool about your space, is that even though you are Buffalo-based, Buffalo is in the name of your institution, that doesn't seem to be the actual mission of your place, to like really just focus only on Buffalo, like the Buffalo art community. It's like larger than that, right? That what you guys are trying to do. So tell me a little bit more about the mission and the goals of what you want to accomplish with BICA.
Yeah, I often like talk about how BICA is for Buffalo, but it's not necessarily always of Buffalo. It's and an institute, of course, is supposed to like bring new ideas and like bring and sharpen new and interesting ideas. And so for us, that meant less. It doesn't mean never showing Buffalo artists or anything. It doesn't mean that we're like specifically turning our back to anyone from our area, but it really means that like looking for what the needs are and who's bringing interesting and new ideas. And for us, that means like bringing people who are not in Buffalo right now, but who are in similar stages in their career as other people in Buffalo and whose like practices might be interesting to see here, not just for artists, but for like people generally. And so Bonanza, this is a retrospective of their work, which of course is sort of a cheeky thing to do because they have been working together for
six years.
And when you think of a retrospective, you typically think of like a single male white author genius who gets all of his, you know, work put up once, and he might be dead or he's really close to death. But of course, one of the things that I think is most interesting and important about their practice is that they are constantly challenging the sort of author, any idea of authorship, because like truly when they make paintings, they make them all together. And every time people come into the show in Buffalo, they say like, oh, who makes the paintings? And we get to go through this like discussion of like, it's not one person, it's three people. It's three people making paintings at the same time, like kind of democratically. Like
egalitarianly,
yeah.
Not democratically. And with Bonanza too, there's also this, the abstract work that they make connects deeply to, especially the work that the Albright Knox has historically been invested in. They've got a ton of abacs, and so there's those connections there. And it like, as a local, I feel safe saying this. Buffalo has often been very kind of like myopic and has a hard time looking beyond itself for opportunities, especially in the art world. And it truly, without any sense of like condescension, one of the things that artists in Buffalo, I think, kind of need to be pushed towards understanding is that they are emerging into the same art miasma and atmosphere and environment that we all are. And so learning to get your work outside of Buffalo, starting to like understand where your work fits into the larger picture, that it's not just tied entirely to regionalism, which is a really important thing. We are deeply invested in keeping like the local and like trying to identify what artists here kind of like stand out in and what their like movement might be. But it is like artists here, if we want to build art worlds, part of that is not just drawing attention to ourselves, but also putting ourselves out there.
It's honestly not unlike at Boston Rainer in San Francisco. It's like actually very similar to our mission there too, was to, you know, we tried to pair artists who are not from the Bay with an artist from the Bay to bring like two different places into dialogue and connect different art worlds. And I feel like it's not like our desires for Bika are not dissimilar, like these senses of connection. And it's not obviously we're showing Bonanza right now, but we aren't just trying to connect Buffalo to the Bay Area. We're trying to connect it to Los Angeles, and we're trying to connect it to New York. And we understand that all of these are like, a lot of the work is connections that we hold through whatever we've done right now. And hopefully those things will grow to be like people who are living. Maybe there's somebody great who we should show who lives in Iowa or something. Like there's all sorts of ways to start bringing discussions together that are bringing art worlds together, and also understanding again that this isn't just for artists. We can't keep doing the art world for artists. We have to start looking at how the art world matters and is useful to everyone else.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it calls back to one of the times you and I, Emily, have talked on this podcast where you mentioned this idea of cross-pollination. Right? Like you guys are really trying to do that with this place where it's like you're trying to connect several places with each other, you know, not just like only doing art just for Buffalo or only bringing the Bay Area art to show Buffalo people. It's like you're trying to really cross over and benefit both, both communities, right? Or any community that you work with and you show at Bika. Which is great because it ties in because I wanted to talk to you guys about this thing you guys do. This, you have a curatorial theme for 2019, right? And you guys aren't just like guided. You guys are trying to guide yourself through a theme, but not necessarily a group of artists or a specific type of art form. It's like more of an idea. So tell me about what this curatorial theme, because Bonanza, the show that they currently have at your space right now, that's the first show, right, of the year for
this theme. Right. So yeah, like we said, we knew what the name of this space would be before we even knew kind of like what the like ethos or idea of the space would be. And before we knew who we would show, and like exactly obviously what our space would look like and stuff. And so we are well aware that calling ourselves an institute of anything in our first year is kind of high-minded and
potentially arrogant.
And so one, it's like a name to grow into, but two, it allows us this year to examine what exactly an institution is, how artists can help form them, and hopefully through our workshops and engagements show in some ways how institutions can better serve their public. And so this year is starting with Bonanza, which is a look at the institution of museums. Next show, opening in June 2nd, I think, is Lindsay Preston Zappas, who it might be a week later. Lindsay Zappas is the editor and founder and publisher of Carla Magazine.
For Contemporary Art Review, LA.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, she's an artist.
Yeah. And so she'll be doing an exhibition and a workshop that it looks like right now will be in like two parts that looks at the institution of the press. And so there'll be some art writing workshops that will hopefully, it looks like now, lead to the launch of a zine here. And then the third show, Rachel Fine is SFAI
undergraduate
grad, and she just completed her MFA at Syracuse. She will be doing an exhibition that looks at the institution of healthcare and the medical industry. And I in my family have a lot of connections to the medical world here, and so there'll be a lot of like cross-pollinating kind of like lectures and things.
That's cool.
Yeah. So for next year, where the new theme is humor as a tool, and it's the theme has been a great way to organize our own thoughts and organize, obviously, who we want to show, but kind of like in any 1 year span of time, like who is the audience that we want to address and reach out to. And then two, when it comes to grant writing, it's really helped clarify. We know our overall mission, but when you can say, here is exactly what we want to achieve and here is how in the next year. And it's not just like we want to have 8 visual art exhibitions and some sound stuff too. But we can really say like, it's about this, and through this theme, we hope to serve and inform X audience. It's been like a really useful framework for us.
Yeah, that's great. And that's the other cool thing too, is like, you, aside from just like the curatorial part, just like the simple, like, you know, just curating a show, showing the show, there's like all this programming that goes along with it. And I saw even on your site that you had like workshops and stuff. Like it's really this place where it's more than just a place to show art. It's really a place where you guys are like bringing in, trying to bring different aspects of the art community and resources to that same community, to the same location.
More than the art community. That's the like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're really
that's
trying.
That's
the
short and long-term goal. Yeah. And like we've been able to play with our strengths in these first few shows, which is exhibiting art, knowing artists, and really getting the workshops to like reach out to other people. And like the Bonanza Fashion Show is not exactly a workshop, but like that is going to be our first very public thing where we're inviting a lot of like non-art worlders to be a part. And so, yeah.
And okay, so long term, like, all right, so long term obviously is having this like this place self-sustaining. Long term, do you guys envision yourself, you know, I would assume long term you want this place to live for a long time, right? How about what do you guys see yourselves and your roles at this place long term?
Very good question.
Yeah, I mean, so we just had our first board meeting a few weeks ago, and I'm the president of the board.
Who do you have on this board? This is great.
Yeah, our board is primarily art and art people now, but we've got a very helpful and friendly lawyer friend. But yeah, there are like, it's interesting when you're a nonprofit, like Emily kind of, or me, has to be the board president in this first year or first 2 years just to take executive actions on things.
But the hope is that we have this board and we've selected who we did because we felt like they sort of get the idea of what we're trying to go for. And we also need them to get it for a while, because if eventually we'd like to get this to a point where we can pay ourselves. And then when you can pay yourself, you obviously can't be on the board anymore. So we need them to know enough about what we're doing to feel confident that in a few years' time, we can step off the board into an executive director sort of position. But also, we feel pretty strongly that it's not something that like we should own forever, and we chose this really big name. That means that it can't be only our ideas forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 10 years' time, maybe it will be two other people.
Maybe 12 years' time at the rate. The right funding is,
we don't know
how. Yeah, but truly I don't think we want to be doing the same thing for the next 20 or 30 years. And it seems like there is a lot of institutional decadence and then decay that starts to set in if you have the same leadership over multiple decades. And so like we're pretty we would like, after say 10 years, to pass the torch to
the next
new blood.
The next great Emily and Nando's of Buffalo, New York.
Yeah, it sounds cool, and it feels like too, doing it that way always allows new and fresh ideas to keep coming through, and like I guess like change with the times, and then change the way the art community changes, and the Buffalo community itself, like the regular community changes. So it sounds like you're really allowing that opportunity with setting up this institution.
We're at least designing it in.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that it can go there, and that our, you know, own desires to have stability, or I don't know.
We're hoping that there'll be cool jobs in Buffalo in 10 years for us to move into. But that is like definitely one of the like smaller art world problems is that there are not a whole lot of institutional level artwork and jobs to be held. And so I think that the reason that you don't see a lot of churn at the top of a lot of these organizations is that there's nowhere else to go after you leave. And hopefully we can help build an ecosystem over the next 10 to 15 years where there are more opportunities for artwork.
Thanks for coming on, guys. It was great talking to you guys again. Before I let you guys go, tell me anything you guys want to plug. Any upcoming shows?
Lindsay's Atlas is opening, I think, like the 9th or maybe the 17th of June. But
there's also a cool article about us in the Creative Independent that a friend of ours, Annie Bielski, she wrote an interview or did an interview with us. And awesome, take a look at that if you want to hear more about what we're doing. Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I look forward to hearing more about all the cool stuff you guys are doing over there.
Thank you, Lewis. Good. Yeah.
All right.
That's it, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Emily and Nando for coming on to the podcast. The first exhibition of 2019, titled Charmed, a Bonanza Retrospective, just wrapped up this past weekend, which included a runway fashion show as a celebration of ecstatic resistance and acceptance. I have a few pictures up on the podcast website as a reference for you all. Then, opening June 14th, is the second in a series of exhibitions at BICA dedicated to remaking institutions into utilities that serve the public, titled Lindsay Preston Zappas, I Forgot My Shoes. To learn more, visit www.thebica.org. And until next time, everyone.